Cavalier's Call by Grant DeGraff. Chapter 1. The Arabian stallion galloped furiously across the sands of the Algarve, the southwestern tip of Portugal and of their entire Europe. The year was 1383. The rider was a courier and he carried an important message critical to the future of the country. His saddle bore the insignia of the royal crown, yet his cloak lacked the markings that might have indicated that his business was of an official nature. The messenger pressed his spurs into the stallion's belly, urging the horse to quicken the pace so that he would reach his destination before sunset. The white Arabian snorted the crisp Atlantic sea air and responded to his rider's call. Sagres was a small settlement on the extreme southwestern tip of the Algarve. It was also a place to heal the wounds of bygone battles, convalesce a battered spirit and soul, and a location for visionaries to map the contours of the future. It had grown into a prosperous hamlet of summer villas, founded and developed by the resort's inhabitants. Through necessity, they had dug and constructed a social system that would supply and meet the demands of progress and sufficiency. These people of Sagres, of Villedenfonte, would serve their founder and leader through times of celebration and grief, share and be privy to the great plans and power games of generals and would-be explorers, participating in their aspirations and dreams. The bells on the central tower began to toll, a signal of a distant rider. He was a man that pressed the gravel and carried an important and crucial communication. The residents of that quiet, sleepy hollow cast their eyes to the north as a cloud of white dust tailed the determined rider. It was his signature to a mission that would change the map of the future. The messenger galloped into Sagres, carefully guiding the Arabian towards the royal villa. The stallion sensed that he was at journey's end, wrestling aggressively with his bit and increasing the speed of his gallop.
Salutos, amigos! I must meet with Infante, Jorda Fiz, immediately. I bear important information and news critical to the future of our country, announced the rider.
Jour de Fez was a man who had lived his life in hope and battle. Throughout his life, he cradled the welfare and the love for his country close to his bosom, and when the horn was sounded, he had answered to the call of duty. As a teenager, he had travelled in the Valley of Kings and drunk from the gravy of childhood aspirations, dreaming about a day in which he would lead Portugal into battle. Never for a single moment had he seriously contemplated the realization of those visions, which were always lost and forgotten to the empty pockets of unfulfilled aspirations. During the sunny winter days on the Algarve, Joe had seized at occasional moments, gazing to the west across the Atlantic, considering the challenges that awaited the nation. At times he sipped on the thick port produced from the vines of the Douro Valley in the north. People born, nurtured and cultivated on Portuguese soil had learned to absorb the nutrients of the land that would make them a great romantic in matters of love and a fierce warrior in times of battle. The Castilian neighbours would jibe at aspiring cavaliers who wished to entertain an affair with a Westerner.
Merci for the soldier who kisses and embraces the serpent, they teased. Better to know the venom of a lover than to taste the rivers of pleasure and lust from an enemy, the soldiers roared in retort.
Jo would wet whisker with guests, offering them generous measures of his cast and corked Douro collection.
Not recommended for the faint-hearted, he would warn. too strong for the planet to me go, or just enjoying the sea breeze?
Joe would banter with gentle nudges of comforting relief from the corner of his guest's shoulders. Joe Duffy's reputation preceded him. Known as a person who was passionate in his undertakings, he lived a life by his book. He was clear in his thinking as he was in exacting the high standards of excellence by which he lived. Joe's mother had tragically perished in childbirth, leaving him an orphan of the monarchy and an infant who was raised by the king's servants. By the age of 12, he had mastered 6 languages: Castilian, Latin, Czech, German, French, and Italian. Joe also had participated in several battles. At 15, he was commissioned as a field operator in Portugal's famed spy unit. On one of his missions, he infiltrated the French Royal Guard when he posed as a Castilian knight and retrieved valuable intelligence that was passed on to the English. This set the tone and created a mood of cooperation, leading to an Anglo-Portuguese alliance that would shine and burn for generations to come. Joe's accomplice for the French mission was his childhood friend, Nuno Alvares Pereira, who was born from Portuguese and Galician nobility. It was a fate that they both shared. The boys had both been schooled in the art of warfare and horsemanship by royal guardsmen at the behest of Joe's father, Pedro, King Peter I. He was a leader who adopted a no prisoners shall be taken approach towards his enemies. In the years that followed their early training, Joe and Nuno were encouraged by the crown to participate in dangerous cross-border missions into Castilian territory. Although these two countries enjoyed brief interludes of peace and relative tranquility, the underlying antagonism that existed between them was at the time of these escapades brittle and corrosive. Joe and Nuno would gallop through the Castilian countryside and her villages, challenging their boyhood contemporaries to contests in advanced horsemanship and endurance. The riders would agree on a predefined circuit and traverse through the uneven, treacherous terrain at breakneck speeds. It was a tournament of endurance for horse and rider alike, a race against time, a test of stamina and of grit and determination. During most of these encounters, Joe and Nuno, Los Infossares, or the Raiders as they became known, weighed in with a distinct disadvantage. They were of slighter build relative to their muscular Castilian counterparts, of younger age and experience, and always outnumbered in a game that was robust and physically challenging. They were familiar with the water table, with the lie of the land, and knew where the wet patches of soft, muddy ground and marshes would be found. They had an understanding of local wind conditions and knew how strong gusts could affect a horse's gait and sap the creature of its strength. For the Raiders, victory was never certain. On most occasions, they would retreat to friendly territory on the western side of the border. Here they would seek the refuge of warm straw and scurry for the taste of familiar cuisine. It would be a time to lick the injuries, rub salt into the wound, and cleanse the cuts that had been etched across their shoulder blades. These were wounds that were marked into their flesh through the crack of leather hide held by the hand of rival horsemen. It was the boyhood battles of the Castilian hills, the physical and emotional beatings and the brutal falls and bruises which transformed the Raiders from boys who slung at mud stones to become men of steel and might.